Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Apologies if the old episode here and there is uploaded a little bit late. We're very busy. Just the two of us here, guys.
I'm morning, day and night in my free time getting this out.
It's like, you know, when you go to like the front of the train and you just, in the old fashioned days, there's just two guys covered in soot. Be like,
yeah. You guys are sitting with a lovely tea that's just lightly rumbling. Whereas me and George are like, what do you mean we're out of court? The break.
They haven't brought the scones out yet. What are they doing up there?
We're also the chefs.
We're also doing the tea.
Doing wrong, George?
What?
We don't have a Baron. We don't have a higher evil version of us that's fatter and uglier, that bathes and stands around in robes and like that we answer to, but actually like a horrible agent
that says, "And tell me about the Crown premiere."
Yes.
Have we taken it?
Everyone knows the Crown premiere is famously hard, and then you just slice someone's throat.
Yeah. Did you go to the BAFTAs this year?
Yeah.
No, Baron, we didn't.
We did go to the BAFTAs.
My Arrakis. My BAFTAs. My Dune.
We don't have that. And I feel like that's where we're going wrong.
If only we reported to a higher, fatter evil.
Yeah. How is that not a good idea in all business? To have like an overlord, an executive producer.
In a dark room, in a bubble bath.
Yeah, a shareholder.
In a lava lamp, yeah. He bubbles up and says, "And what of the production this week? We put out three YouTube shorts and a couple of TikToks."
Why didn't that go on YouTube shorts? Yeah. Because there's a 60-second limit on YouTube shorts, but not on TikTok, so we'll have to reformat that for socials. And then just when he's done talking, he'll just rise up out of his chair.
Yeah, or she. His spine.
Women can be evil.
Yeah, but in our head, we've got Stellan Skarsgård, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah,
who would you cast as, like, I know Stellan Skarsgård's there. Who would you, if you could cast any actor to play our evil overlord agent who like threatens us from behind, or threatens others on
Jonathan
our behalf?
Jonathan Pryce.
Oh yeah, he'd be good.
Like in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes, Jonathan.
And why haven't you done that?
I'd like a Christopher Lee.
Hello.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like man. Count Dooku to Saruman.
You
to Scaramanga.
Have not gone viral in 20 days.
Well, Master Kenobi, this is a horrible mistake, Master Kenobi.
Your train announcement video did underperform.
Yeah, like when we arrive, he's like, "And Gandalf the Grey marches to Isengard," and says, "It's George Pulp and James Kitchen marching towards seeking my counsel."
I like that.
Like, he's already started the conversation with you as you're driving in, and then you have to be like, "Hi, Saruman, thank you for being in my head."
Have you seen that video when Gandalf rides to... Where does he live? Isengard. Where's Saruman?
Saruman lives in Isengard.
When Gandalf's riding there and they talked about the fences, the chain links between the fences that look like it's part of a national park. they're really actually, when you look at them, they're quite out of place.
Yeah.
They look like they're in a park in New Zealand in the early noughties.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And someone's like, it looks like there should be picnic blankets just out of shot.
It's like, please don't feed the ducks.
Yeah, literally. Ducks don't like bread, really. I mean, they do. I mean, they like to eat it, but they shouldn't.
Where did you learn that?
Well, it's just been around for ages. People have been like, you know, bread is not actually good for ducks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the hyper-processed.
It's true, yeah. It probably is. Yeah, of course.
Wheat? Well,
they're not evolved
to
eat bread.
And all the emulsifiers that are in
there. I wonder if, like, the British park ducks have, through multiple generations, evolved to digest bread quite well.
The ducks are like the Baron. They're sitting there going, "What of the bread this week?" Yeah. "Oh, someone brought a baguette in the other day."
Yeah.
"God, it's school holidays."
This multi-seed. That won't do.
I am convinced his bath in that is made from olive oil and balsamic vinegar. If you've seen Dune, you know he's definitely bathing in a beautiful emulsion of posh vinegar.
I bet he stinks as well, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's not wearing anything.
And like the fat flaps, they'd be slimy. Very, very moist.
He's also very front heavy, the Baron. He doesn't carry any fat around the back.
No back fat.
Which implies, I don't know, is that mainly booze that's done that to him?
He can't walk. He has like a little respirator, sort of like an oil in Dune Part 2, he had like a sort of black tank that was feeding him juices. Very Mad Max,
actually.
Oh, I didn't
see that, the black tank. I know he's got the metallic spine that helps him float.
Yes. When he goes to the gladiator scene.
Not a spoiler.
Please just check out our Dune Part 2 review reviews from last week. He has his little chair with like a thing following him, keeping him juiced up. I don't know what it did.
After the injury he sustained in Dune Part 1, I assume.
I'm sure there's a wonderful little Blu-ray extra where it'll explain. Even never talk about the life support system for the Baron.
Support. I'll change the topic here a second. Mm. We didn't talk about the Fantastic Four casting announcement, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to mention it because, so the cast of Fantastic Four was announced, and it was Pedro Pascal, as we all thought it would be, for Mr. Yeah. Fantastic. It was Vanessa Kirby for Sue Storm. It was
Vanessa Kirby.
Johnny Quinn for... hang on, have I got that right? Quinn, it's Johnny Quinn. Johnny Quinn, Johnny Storm for the Torch.
Yeah.
And it was Ebon Moss Bacharach for the Thing from The Bear. And what I noticed with all those actors, I was like, beep, that is, they're all from TV. They all those actors made their name in TV.
True.
You've got Pedro Pascal, so Narcos, Game of Thrones, Mandalorian, Last of Us. You've got the Crown. The Crown. Yeah, but you know, he's a TV name, really.
Yes, yeah, totally.
The Crown for Vanessa Kirby. You've got Stranger Things for Johnny Quinn. And totally. The Bear. What I love about Ebon Moss Bacharach in The Bear is that I remember when he was in Girls. Did you ever used to watch Girls?
Mm.
And he was in that. And then I was like, oh, yeah, he was quite good at that. And then I didn't see him in anything. And then he turns up in The Bear. Now that's what most people know him for. And now he will be in The Fantastic Four.
I should finish Girls.
Good for you, Desi. I don't know how it's aged. I really don't know how that film, that series has aged.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was like, oh, this is cool. Because I was in my early 20s. And I was like, oh, it's kind of New York. And
that could be me.
Real, yeah. It's like aspirational, but also real.
Yeah.
And then, but that, you know, that's finished 7 years ago. I don't know how well that's aged.
I always admired the Lena Dunham's character being so immediately unlikable, but funny, but like fun to watch.
Yeah,
first episode I remember she's really well conceived. In the series? I think I've seen two seasons.
Yeah, she becomes four? They gets the five. She gets five. She does get very insufferable.
Really?
It really does push it to a point where you're like, I almost struggle to
connect with you in any way.
Joseph Quinn is the name of the actor, not Johnny Quinn. Joseph Quinn for the Fantastic Four there.
Johnny Storm, I think you're getting there.
From Stranger Things. and I don't know how well that's aged. And actually...
what worries you about it?
No, I don't know. I don't actually remember a lot of it. I watched it all and I really enjoyed it. I just don't know. I just think that it might be, I don't know, just kind of dated, just slightly tinned, just things that might be a bit...
Adam Driver in there being kind of awkward and strange.
Actually, I mean...
I would eat when I get hungry.
My girlfriend made this point about Girls because I quite liked it. And she was like, oh, okay, I'll watch it. And she actually really didn't like it. And she was like, she got that the show was meant to be showing how like some friendships can be very toxic and like can be as messy and destructive.
Yeah. But
she was
cutesy.
But it got to the point where she was like, you guys just aren't friends.
Yeah.
This show shouldn't exist because we can't, stop pretending that you four are friends. You're actually all horrible to each other. You don't actually like each other.
Yeah, I guess like in the creator's eyes, it's like being in New York, it's like it's that quote, like, I'm from New York, therefore I'm interesting. Everyone there's a narcissist. Mm. They're meant to be doing something great there. And so there's probably an element of like social climbiness and you're not exactly aligned to my vision right now. At this very crucial point of my life, I'm supposed to be maximizing everything.
I do remember, I don't know if this is my unintentional male bias as a male viewer, but I do remember probably. All the male characters in it I've found absolutely like land. I guess it's because they're supporting characters, so they do have less burden to wear. But like Adam Driver, great. Desi Collins, played by Ebon Moss-Bacharach, great. Jonathan Reynolds as Elijah, great. Mm. And the guy played Ray, great. Whenever they were in an episode, I was like, oh, great, I love these guys.
Classic man. Can we hear more from the men?
I'm such a man.
In a show called Girls.
Ugh. Ugh. I'm such a...
Can we make boys? Unbelievable.
I was busy thinking about...
Boys.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome to episode 118 of Pulp Kitchen. This is the week, of course, that Dune is out big time across the nation, across the world. And I hope at this point you've gone and listened to our review or you've seen it now. You're going to go and listen to our review last week in episode 117. Our spoiler-free review and our spoiler-filled review is in a bonus. Mm-hmm. So check that out as well. So you've got either options there
all the
for
Dune
you.
Content.
But we saw it ahead of time for this reason. So when it comes out, it's ready for you to watch and consume. Get that spice.
Yeah.
So we're going to be not be talking about Dune stuff today. And actually, because of the time we're recording it, we're actually recording it. The day we're recording now, it still hasn't come out in cinemas, but by the time you will be listening to it, it will have done. So in terms of Dune correspondence, it will be in the next episode.
Yeah.
But do send your thoughts in about Dune Part 2 to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
Totally.
We'd love to hear it. But today, we're going to be covering from big science fiction epic Dune across
let's
the world.
Just bring you back
let's
down.
Let's go bring back down to the South British seaside in the 1920s with Wicked Little Letters. That's what we're going to be reviewing today.
My grandma the other day, she came up to me. She goes, James, there was a film. I wanted to ask you. It's called something. Mm. And I was like, okay. She's like, no, it's got Louise Kohlberg in it. Olivia Colman. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's... And then I also couldn't remember the name. I was like, Wicked something. But yeah. My grandma is asking, and I think listening to what is all going on with the Wicked Little Letters.
With the Wicked Little Letters. Yeah. Tell me about this, which we will be doing in a second. So we'll do that today. I don't know why I lost confidence into my sentence then.
I'm pretty sure I'm waking up in really weird moods because like I need to listen to something to go to sleep because of probably sort of anxiety, unaddressed issues, and I really enjoy these.
I'm sorry,
YouTube...
James, actually, we can talk about that.
It's a common thing. There's many loads of videos I love listening to, which is like, but what is infinity? Jeffrey Wright doesn't narrate them, but he could. And it's like they're so good because it like explains to you how infinity is like basically just a concept, and how the more you unpack it, the more it doesn't make sense, but actually does make sense. I think I wake up with a really strange existential questioning of my life because subconsciously through the night YouTube is just playing like what is real but it's probably not real, and I think I just it's affecting me, and I'm like, yeah, but I have work today, but do I?
What is work?
Yeah.
Oh god,
I've got to put an episode out. What does that
I really
mean?
Can't meet that today for you. I can't bring the existential grandeur
just
for
just
you.
Just a normal sweet movie.
Just a normal sweet movie. Wicked Little Letters coming now. So let's do Wicked Little Letters.
Let's have a Wicked Little Review.
Let's have a Wicked Little Letters of a Wicked Little Time. James, Littlehampton, 1920s. It is England. It is post-World War One. It is a time of women's suffrage, of a lot of emotional hangover from the First World War.
The round hats that flare out a bit.
Bonnets. No, they're not bonnets. Bonnets are more Jane Austen.
You know the one.
I know what I mean.
With the little rim that also tilts down.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Wicked Little Letters, based on a pretty much true story of a series of scandalous letters that went around Littlehampton. Basically, the story is about this. Olivia Colman plays Edith Swan. She lives at home with her mother and her father, played by a fantastic Timothy Spall, good in everything.
He's so easily cast.
Look at him, you're like, you are a staple. You are a British staple. You are the staple in the middle of the book that binds things together.
He has an English sort of look about
terrific.
Him.
Terrific. Her next door neighbour is Rose Gooding, played by Jessie Buckley. Now, on the one hand, Edith Swan, who's Olivia Colman, is timid, quiet, polite, mousy, shy. And on the other side, Rose Gooding, played by Jessie Buckley, is boisterous, loud, speaks her mind, is very direct, swears in public. It makes a little bit of a spectacle of herself. Likes to drink, likes to dance, likes to make noise. She's a single mother with a daughter. Her husband was killed in the war. There's sort of speculations and lots of curtain twitching about who she shacks up with. Mm. The film begins with the 19th letter, and a letter is posted through Edith Swan's house, and her mother and her father, played by Timothy Spall, look at this thing, and they open it, and it is filled with the most abusive torrent of quite funny swearing that in the context of stiff Britain in the 1920s is quite comical and quite jarring. Mm. Timothy Spall goes down to the police station, and where he encounters on the front desk Gladys Moss, played by Anjana Vazan, and he immediately says, no, not you, I want one of them, pointing to the male police officers. And she says, oh, I can take your complaint. He says, no, I want one of them. And they begin proceedings to try and get Rose Gooding booked up for sending these letters, even though there's no evidence, there's no proof. No one really seems to like her, and she seems like the obvious candidate because she, the next door neighbour, doesn't like them. So you have on one side the law pursuing Rose Gooding, trying to pin her up for this thing. You have Edith Swan, Olivia Colman sort of saying, I don't really want to make a fuss about this. No, please, it's not me. It's just my dad making a fuss. And then you have Anjana Fazan playing Gladys Moss, who is always referred to as a women police officer. Everyone else is a police officer. She says, I'm a women's police officer. Mm. And if people say, well, I can see you're a woman. You don't have to call me that. And she's constantly patronized and belittled and kept aside. She gets the inkling that Rose Gooding is not the guilty party here. She believes that the guilty party is someone else and someone else to blame, and then there's further deeper. The men at the top aren't really interested. And so begins this sort of tale of justice slightly being miscarried, scandalous swearing. And if anyone who's seen the trailer, it's kind of this scabrous, raunchy kind of comedy drama, Wicked Little Letters. Based in Littlehampton, but shot in Arundel, which is a town I know very well, which is near Littlehampton, but it's in West Sussex. Gorgeous, everything, lovely period detail. So, Wicked Little Letters. I thought this was actually pretty solid stuff, to be honest with you. I will say that it's... what was quite surprising and elevated it for me early on is that it's very clearly... Very quickly, you begin with sort of a letter and it's funny and it's sweary, but very quickly the film actually reveals itself to be about something much more serious and quite sad, which is about misogyny, for a start. The whole film is actually about misogyny. And even though the film is sold as being Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley, it is actually a three-hander. It's Olivia Colman, Jesse Buckley, and Anjana Fazan. Each of them experiencing misogyny of the tight conservatism of the 1920s, although parallels are very much drawn to the 2020s and in the UK as well. And actually there's a social media narrative, a parallel running with this whole film about trolling and abuse. And actually the tagline for this movie is be careful what you post. Ba-boom.
Gotcha.
And actually very quickly, like I said, it has this serious sadness to it. With Jesse Buckley's character, it's clear people don't like her because she's an outsider. She's Irish. She's a single mother. They immediately hold her in sort of contempt for reasons, for the stupid double standards that because she's a woman, because she's loud and because she's drunk and because she's boorish, that somehow is even more egregious. And this sort of weird disruption to some sort of invisible status quo that infuriates the men and the people of the village. On the other hand, Olivia Colman's character, Edith Swan, is living this very sad, actually quite uncomfortable existence with her mother and father. She's a middle-aged woman, but she still lives in still sleeps in the same room with this tiny red bedroom cottage. Her parents have two single beds, and she has a bed at the cross and across the room. And the father, Timothy Spall's behavior is incredibly controlling and incredibly manipulative and very, very uncomfortable to watch, actually. And meanwhile, Gladys Moss, the police officer, is clearly onto something, clearly is smarter and is working in this job because her father was a police officer who was killed, but constantly stopped, thrown the book at her, met with the bureaucracy and the misogyny of the police system. And is kept aside. And actually, that really kind of gives most of the film its sort of dramatic heft. The letters and the swearing kind of comes in and out. But if you're expecting a kind of scandalous, scabrous, funny, raunchy comedy, it's not. It's actually quite much more than that. And the serious thing about the misogyny and the abuse of and the misjudgment that these women experience is really interesting. And I think that's probably the heart of the movie, I'd say. Jesse Buckley, I think, is probably one of my favourite actors at the moment.
I love her.
She's great.
She's been great in all the stuff she's done recently, regardless of the quality of all those individual things. She stands out.
She has one. I know, when we talked about this before on the show, I don't agree with this, but that idea of like who has iPhone face and who doesn't, a face.
Oh, yeah.
But Jesse Buckley, I think, is a face that can suit any genre, anytime. Yeah. I could see her being like a dusty old gold miner in, the 1800s, or being a woman on a space station. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's just fantastic. And Olivia Colman, I mean, I think she does really good work here. And Olivia Colman is a good actor. And I think that when you and I have spoken about her before, we've only really talked about her in relation to The Crown, which
on the show.
On the show, exactly. And it's like her performance in The Crown, I think, was a little bit didn't quite work. And I think, but what Olivia Colman does best is not when she's doing straight drama, it's actually when she's doing either comic or tragic characters. Yeah. So obviously we know her for a comedy, Peep Show, etc. But like Empire of Light, not a great film, yeah. but her performance in that as a very tragic character is very good. And in this, she does kind of get to do both. She's doing very funny, quiet, small performances of saying, oh, I don't really want to make a fuss against the kind of humor of Jesse Buckley. But also she's really fearful of her father, of really fearful of Timothy Spall, who is this kind of looming figure. And I think also the film does create a nice context about what that immediate period first after the First World War was doing to both men and women.
Yeah.
You know, you've got women's suffrage in the background, which some people just found abhorrent. And at the same time, there's a hint about the emotional hangover that the First World War has had on someone like Timothy Spall.
Yeah.
And how he views men in the village. And he makes comments about men in the village about in relation to the war, about why they're here and why did they survive.
It's quite nice to put that context in when you have people after World War One, between World War Two. It's quite not easy to forget, but it's interesting to remind you of what that context is in history and where people are at.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting tension at the time. So I think it's like I said, surface level, you get the kind of comedy, you get the profanity, but you get really good performances. It's very stylish, and it's just got this very uncomfortable sadness and quite depressing element of misogyny in it. Mm. And as a portrayal of three different types of misogyny, and about how women can sometimes, are pitted against other women as well.
Yeah,
it's really really interesting. If you didn't catch it at the cinema, fine. It goes down with a nice cup of tea at home, probably. But I thought it was, it's solid, interesting stuff. I'll be interested to know how it travels outside of the UK. Mm. So I want to be, if this gets released in America, I want to know what their sort of perception of it is.
Beyond the UK,
There is some very dexterous, well-said, very eloquent, flowing profanity in it.
Nice.
Which I like. And watching the thespians of Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley get their mouths around the profanity is quite good. And there's a couple of phrases that I was like, that's an insult.
Speaking of swearing, there's a really funny comedian, Scottish comedian called Daniel Sloss, who does a really great comedy bit.
We saw him live together.
Yeah, we did. I saw him on the tube ones as well. But he does a really good comedy bit on the difference between how Americans swear and how the Brits swear. And it breaks down how Americans do it wrong by saying things like twat.
Yeah, instead.
He's like, it's twat. It's really funny. You go check him out. That's nice to hear. I'd also heard grumblings that it was actually surprisingly solid, and the talent is a huge draw for me.
Yeah.
And I think Olivia Colman, just expanding on your comment, it's like she's undoubtedly a very good actor, and I feel like she could almost be, because I think what she does is very varied, but there's a specificity to what she does, and I feel like she could easily be miscast. I'm not saying she is in this, but when you see Olivia Colman, I think she said this publicly, she's very showbiz shy, she's very keeps to herself. She's not naturally flowing with the fame that comes with being an actor of her prestige and her high regard. But it sounds like it's a hit for Olivia Colman.
Yeah, it really plays really plays to her strengths. And it's nice, you do get, if anyone who's familiar with kind of British comedy, British TV, there's endless carousel of familiar faces, Lolly Adefope, Tim Key coming in at all sort of angles.
Nice.
It's got something to it.
Grandma, there you go. That was George's review of Wicked Little Letters. If you want to send an email, Grandma, you can do by emailing into hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. And if, Grandma, you don't want to do that, that's fine. The rest of the sirens can send their email.
Thank you, Sandra. I look forward to reading your email in a future episode.
But you know who did write in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com? Johanna, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, long-term friend of the show.
Says, hello, chums. Long-time friend of the show and fellow cinephile here.
She can hear us.
Do not self-proclaim. No, I'm kidding. This week, I was lucky enough to be invited to a press screening to watch Wicked Little Letters, new British comedy movie with Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley. Going in, I knew nothing beforehand except a quick glance at the trailer, and I was so pleasantly surprised at how funny and solid the film was. Its premise is based on a true story set in 1920s in a small village in England. The locals are desperately trying to work out who the anonymous person is that is posting infamous and obscene letters to the residents of Littlehaven, set in a period where women...
Littlehaven. Incorrect.
Set in a period where women had won the right to vote like a man, but were still not allowed to go to the pub, drink, or swear like one. This movie was written by a comedian, and this pays off well in the dialogue, being witty and impeccably timed. Mm. The film also weaves in the etymology of swear words and taboo language. I won't go much into the ins and outs of the story, as it's best saved when you see it yourself, but the film sparks some really interesting conversations about swearing and obscenity in society historically and in modern times. Yes. For example, I grew up in a non-swearing household where the worst swear word I ever heard my father say was when, in anger, he called me a little git, which made matters worse as I found it hilarious.
That's so English as well.
I was absolutely stunned visiting other friends' families to see swearing was a normal part of everyday conversation. Were your families partial to a bit of profanity? Interestingly, this film had a hard time getting past the American Film Board due to its multiple use of the C word. England was fine with it, though. Yeah, we are. Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley are equally standout stunning in this, and I urge people to watch it if they can, as it's a little British gem of a movie. Enjoy your work, lads. Side note, have you ever thought about hosting a series of live podcast recordings with an audience? Sirens in my end. Johanna, pronounced with English, with an English J, like James. Johanna. Smiley face.
Johanna. Thank you, Johanna. We, on the live
swearing
events...
House?
Start from the top. Did I live in a swearing house? Swearing occurred in my house. I would not say it's a regular occurrence, but I have memories of father blistering in moments of rage, shouting the F word. And actually, I think, he's not going to forgive me for saying this, but he did drop the C-bomb on me one time when he was teaching me how to drive. He would say it's because I turned without indicating and probably put our lives at risk. I don't think I agree. But so swearing was heard, but not often said.
Not mad swearing, my family. My mum definitely wouldn't, unless really, like... I'd really challenged her, but never to me as like a young kid. And then my dad, not really, but in a football context, might.
Okay.
But like he then doesn't really, he'll be like, oh, we're playing so shit. But he doesn't really go for it. But I remember like being a kid going to football games from a very young age and learning all my swear words there and it being like, oh my God, it's like okay here for people to swear. And like, I'm hearing all of these words for the first time that like, I know it's not way or what you're meant. People aren't talking about this outside of the stadium. So I was like a little kid in Highbury hearing the worst. The referee was and everything, you know?
Well, in terms of profanity, it came back to bite my parents a little bit because I watched films younger than I should have done, right?
Yeah.
But often it was fine because my parents watched them through me, wound through the naughty bits, whatever like that. Anyway. One thing that slipped through the net was when we watched Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels when I was probably like 8.
Yeah, it's a bit young. Something.
Probably wasn't 8. You know what? I'm going to say 9, 10 to give my parents away from Child Protection Services, right? I think it's fine.
Yeah.
And the C word was dropped in that and I'd never heard it before and I didn't know what it meant. It was fine. And then
it's hard to encounter as a kid.
It is hard to encounter. So then I am... in the car with my mum, just mentally just, you know, drifting, daydreaming.
Mommy.
And I'm repeating the dialogue of this scene. My mum's got no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, but I know it word.
You're like, no. Yeah. See, that's where you're
and
wrong.
And I go, anyway, and I drop this word and my mum's like, what? Yeah, what did you just say? And I was like, whoa,
I'm in the movie.
And I was like, you want line by, I can do line by line for you. And she was like, whoa, no. And then obviously I was educated.
Yeah.
But I was also told, parents in the clear, I was educated and told not to swear because it makes you sound stupid.
Yes, it's not nice to swear. It's unpleasant and unkind. I remember like first time I swore at my parents, like when you're like, I just fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like the rush you feel when you're really angry and you swear, you make that impact and you think they're like, oh my God, he's completely...
You think you're going to be crucified.
You think like, oh my God, he said that word that's forbidden. That was fun. Next question.
What was the other question in Johanna's email?
Have you ever thought about hosting a series of live podcast recordings with an audience?
Yes, we thought about it. And it's something we might do. And
we did the quiz, which was great. We want to do more quizzes in the future.
It's percolating. In our brains.
Bear with. It'd be cool. If we get the right opportunity, the right idea, the right venue, all sorts.
It's not a no. It's not a no.
Yeah. It'd have to be London based because most of you are in London. And
yeah, sorry, non-London.
But we give notice for people who are coming from out London, out of town.
Any other emails?
Tyler also writes in on Wicked Little Letters saying, hi guys, I'm writing to see if you've had a chance to discuss the film Wicked Little Letters on the show this year.
Yes.
While it might be a smaller film, I found it to be a fun story about someone sending outrageous hate mail around town. It's particularly funny due to the obscene content of the letters and Jesse Buckley's comedic timing. Mm-hmm. Buckley, by the way, delivers a great performance along with Olivia Colman as always. This leads me to my question. Who would you consider an underrated actor? Mm. For me, Jessie Buckley is one, and I'd love to see her in more roles after enjoying her work in both Wicked Little Letters and Alex Garland's Men. Mm. Another name that comes to mind is Paul Waterhauser. Anyway,
absolutely.
I'm a big fan of the show and can't wait for the next episode. Cheers, Tyler.
Great question about underrated actors. I mean, it's something we talked about like 2 years ago in our episode about.
I'd love to do another one. Maybe during like a really quiet time or for a pre-record, we go through some more gem actors who are gems.
But the thing is, a lot of my names are now just becoming rated. Stars, so Paul Walter Hauser was definitely one. If anyone hasn't seen Richard Jewell, it's a really good movie with him in. But he won an Emmy last year for Blackbird. So that's you're rated now. You can't say he's underrated. I would have said Coleman Domingo. But now Oscar nominated.
What was the title of our one when we talked about like John Carroll Lynch? Was it
most underrated actors?
Most underrated. Yeah. We should do a part two to that. Well, please, Tyler, if you haven't check out that episode from a while ago. We talk about some real great actors who you've definitely seen in a bunch of things and you know their faces. And they've always been great. Mm. But we should do a follow up. We should do like a refreshed 2024 version.
And get it in before everyone starts, winning Oscars and getting blown up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's always plenty. I feel like on the show in general, we cover actors who are underrated. But guys, that was correspondence for Wicked Little Letters. Thank you so much for sending them in. As always, hello at pulpkitchenpodcast.com to get yours on the show.
And obviously send them in with no profanity. No abuse. Try to do like a meta thing where you're like, I'm going to send them a Wicked Little Letter.
It'll probably go to spam if you put loads of swears in it. Yeah.
Thank goodness for a filter.
Thank you.
Let's read some other emails we've had in from our wider pool of sirens. This email is from Ryan, who says, "Hi guys, I love the podcast and I've been a fan since day one."
Wow.
That's a big claim, actually. Really, day one?
Day one.
Does that mean episode one? Surely. I mean, wow.
You're just saying it. I've been a fan since day one. Or like, no.
Literally.
On the day
we uploaded it, 2 hours later, you were like, a new
in,
show?
In the vacuum of content that we put our first episode out in, praying for anyone to see it, you just were like, oh.
Yeah,
Christopher Nolan's new film. Is that funny? That was our first episode.
I know, yeah.
Sorry, I'll leave it to it.
Anyway, last night I watched Rear Window for the first time and I thought the movie was fabulous. I was entertained from beginning to end. The ending of that movie made me jump up and down. I was scared for James Stewart's life. Don't worry, that's not a spoiler. It's a great mystery film and I kept guessing until the end. Have you guys seen Rear Window? I'm sure you have. What do you guys think of it? Also, what do you think of Alfred Hitchcock as a filmmaker? Do you think he's overrated? Maybe for future episodes, you guys can watch Hitchcock films and review them.
I'd love to do
that. Maybe it could get your younger audience into films. Into his films, thank you. Are you? Yep, I'm reading it.
Sorry. I got you.
I hope this podcast will continue to be made forever. Keep up the great work. I love that.
Well, live the podcast.
Love from Malaysia, Ryan.
Me and you being like, so the 17th Batman has been announced.
Yeah, so Doom Part 64 is now out. Dude, where's my MCU spice?
Reboot. Robert Downey Jr. has been brought back to life after he died and came back again to stop the new version of Thanos in the fourth Floribal War.
So first of all, Rear Window.
Rear Window I've not seen. I've seen Psycho and Vertigo, and I'd love to watch more. I wouldn't even sort of make a claim as to whether or not Alfred Hitchcock is overrated, because I've enjoyed the films I've seen of his.
Yeah.
But for me to be like yes or no, is or isn't.
Same, I think.
Undoubtedly seminal and iconic in every single way that we know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it as well. I've seen Vertigo, I've seen Psycho, and I've seen Rear Window, and I think that is it. And it's between probably Psycho.
Have I seen The Birds? No, I've not seen The Birds.
Vertigo is really for the kind of filmmaker that Alfred Hitchcock was.
Yeah,
Vertigo is very beloved by real cineasts because it's much more avant-garde than that kind of film should have been for a noir mystery. Rear Window is just really effective, and it's like there's all this sort of meta commentary in it about the role of the camera, because he's the whole purpose is that he doesn't have a telescope, he has a telephoto lens, and he's broken his leg, and that's how he's able to see into other people's apartments, and it's all about the act of looking and the act of seeing and images, you know, what seeing something before another, the causality. That's great about Rear Window.
I spoke about
this. It holds up.
I spoke about this on the podcast, but me and my sister watched Psycho quite young. Mm. And I remember us both being really taken aback about how striking Hitchcock's style is and how striking and mesmerizing Psycho is. Like just the face in the car and leading up to the house. And I remember to be like, we couldn't stop watching. We were like completely taken aback by it.
And I think what, just sort of very broad brush now going back in about why Hitchcock has a legacy is that he is the kind of director that kind of bridged the gap from being a journeyman director, by which I mean somebody turns up. You used to get these a lot in the 1940s in Hollywood, just people who would just shoot films. The director wasn't regarded as like a name. It was just like, you come in, that happened to be shot by some bloke.
Yeah.
But then what Alfred Hitchcock did is become a bit, as the French would call it, an auteur, applying his own style and elevated. If you look at the types of films Hitchcock makes, which are very story-led, have defined beats, a lot of tension, a lot of drama, he elevated those with like signature style and sort of was able to show to people that you can make sort of functional films that are also very stylish and have a signature of your own style whilst also serving an audience.
And you can see that happening in like the newer format of TV where you don't have as many acclaimed directors working in TV, but now with everything changing, but like Craig Mazin and what's the face from Breaking Bad?
Vince Gilligan.
You know about these people's shows and you'll want to see what they do next, and you're starting to get names of auteurs. Same with video games. Like there are now like, you get like Hideo Kojima and you can sound like Neil Druckmann now and guy did Bioshock, Ken Levine. These are becoming, as the art form evolves, you get auteurs emerging of the people who've defined it.
But I think Sam he's rated Mouser. For good reason. I do think that if like, in order to kind of understand the building blocks of cinema, in a way, I'd almost put him as more functional for the role of learning about cinema than someone like Kubrick, who people fawn over.
You can
break down the DNA of filmmaking within Hitchcock. He's very easy and open to study.
I wouldn't confidently say he's overrated.
No, he's not. He's not overrated. Yeah. He's rated. He was a problematic man in his relationship with his stars. And the way he treated actors. If anyone wants to read about how he treated...
Damn it, he got results.
What's her name? Tippi Hedren. His relationship with Tippi Hedren and the way he treated her. But yes, that's the thing. It was results at all costs.
There's a Hitchcock film that came out a few years ago.
About Hitchcock?
Yeah.
With Anthony Hopkins, Helen Mirren, James Darcy, Scarlett Johansson.
Ready for the cast's
countdown. Thank you, Ryan, for that email about Alfred Hitchcock.
This next one is from Nicholas, who writes into hello@popkitchenpodcast.com just like you can. He says, hi, guys.
Hi.
Nick here from the north of England.
Nondescript.
The north.
The north. Just in the wildlands.
Just north, yeah. That Love Pod, still catching up on the episode.
Love Pod.
Still catching up on episode.
Sorry to the whole north for that entire bit.
I have a Lord of the Rings, Stephen King's It, and a Batman tattoo. My question is, do you have any film-related tattoos? If not, would they be anything you would consider getting? Would there be anything you'd consider getting? Also, can I have a quick review of Godzilla Minus One and the Batman? As a big fan of Batman, I was disappointed by Robert Pattinson, emo grumpy teenager. Did you notice that when the Batmobile is first shown, he revs it up, then stalls it? Why didn't they just edit that out? Keep up the good work. Thanks, Nick. George, tattoo. Show us your tattoo.
I don't have any tattoos. But if I did, and you said I had to only get a film-related tattoo, you'd get the National Treasure Illuminati pyramid because you love that movie so much.
I'd get the Declaration of Independence on my chest. I'm like, steal me, Nick Cage.
That's what I brought it together as like a film race.
You always, like in life, you think about, should I get a tattoo? And then I always, anything I would have thought of getting for 20% at the time, I'm so glad 5 years later, I never got. Yeah. Like even at my peak teen fandom of Lord of the Rings, I'm so glad
I don't have
Harsh Nash Rig Bladug written on my wrist. Like, or just anything.
Yeah.
I'd rather buy like a piece of clothing or jewelry that could be taken off and removed as my preferences change. But not against tattoos. The Deathly Hallows tattoo is one of the most common tattoos that you see on people.
What does it look like?
It's a triangle with a circle and a line. So it's the invisible cloak of invisibility, the resurrection stone, and the Elder Wand.
Right. Okay.
And like that's like a very, it's very, very simple, but it's one of the most common tattoos and therefore it's profoundly unoriginal. Sorry to the likely some of you who have that tattoo who are listening.
I know that, I believe it was James from Raiders of the Lost podcast who we interviewed. He had a tattoo on his wrist from Dune that says fear is the mind killer.
Damn.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty recent as well.
Yeah. I guess you'd have to, he'd probably be a fan of the original.
Yeah. Novels, there's this, I listened to a podcast once. They were talking about, you can't name your kids the characters of stories that are not finished. So like people are naming their kids like Arya, I think it was Game of Thrones, they're referring to like Arya or Daenerys and Khaleesi. And it's like, you don't know what's going to happen to that character.
Yeah.
And Khaleesi was with the exact example where she went batshit crazy, spoilers for Game of Thrones, and did what she did. And it's like, you don't know if they're going to bring that character back, make them a racist, do this, you're going to get a tattoo, you're going to name your child after this character. And it's, the story's not done. You need to let this finish. Even with Lord of the Rings, you don't know if there's going to be an Arwen miniseries where she goes mad and kills everyone.
I think, the heavy decision-making involved.
Yeah.
The commitment involved for a tattoo. Yeah. And Nicholas has other questions.
Can I also have a quick review of Godzilla Minus One?
Look, guys, so many people have told us to watch that. We missed it because it came out, obviously, terrible release time in the UK. Yeah. It came out.
I was away.
And then only had word of mouth when it kind of was really close to Christmas and we had no time. By the time we came back from Christmas, it was gone. Well, we will catch up on it.
I would urge you to go and check out Theories by T, who's a friend of the show. We've done Film Bites with him. He was a big champion of Godzilla Minus One, and he's got reviews on his social media at Theories by T. So go and check that out and give him some love, and he'll give a really good take on that film. And The Batman.
Yeah, so do you know what's funny? So James did a review of The Batman 2 years ago, whenever it came out. And then about 3 months later, I saw it, and then we recorded our thoughts about it.
Oh.
And it was early on in the podcast, so it was a day when the audio did not record.
Yes,
So I delivered all my thoughts.
You never really got your thoughts out. Thoughts.
So I will just tell them briefly now for a film that now...
Matt Reeves is Batman.
Now is 2 years ago, but I'll basically say... Yeah, sorry, Nicholas, if you want James's original one, go and check it out.
Your
my thoughts.
Just cuts out.
I was really, really impressed. I think I was really hooked, particularly for the first hour and a half. I was really like, this is incredibly impressive and dark and twisted. And I was kind of invested in the mystery. Mm. I think it was very, very refreshing. I liked a lot of it. The whole seawall third act thing, I was like, there's a wall of sea?
I've forgotten
sea?
About like, that a lot.
Oh, okay. That kind of like slightly flattened into being fairly generic. But on the whole, I thought it was a really great piece. And when they said that, like, we're going to do a Batman Part 2 now and a Penguin TV spin-off, I thought,
that's coming soon.
I know, but I was like, that's... Oh, so you come in with something new and original... And then you flatten it straight away by over-milking the cow and eventually rebooting it in 5 to 7 years' time.
Yeah. I've seen The Batman twice now. My takeaway when I watched it was that, like, it doesn't feel as mass appeal as The Dark Knight did or other Batmans have. I'm not surprised if some people don't love it. My dad was like, this is a really great Batman film. I really didn't think he'd like it. It's like, it's actually like a really competent drama. Yeah. Which he just never really says about any film.
It's a proper like noir mystery. It's like Seven. It is, isn't it? If The Dark Knight was Heat.
Yeah.
This is Seven.
And I enjoyed the Nirvana guitar strumming and the literal Nirvana singing.
Yeah.
And like the emo-ness of it, the grumpiness of it. You've got to contrast it with everything else that's happening right now.
Yeah.
And the visuals of it were just stunning. I've seen loads of cinematography breakdowns talking about the old scratched lenses they put to make it to just muddy the frame, dirty it, draw the eye into the center. Gorgeous, 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 gorgeous. A cool bat suit as well.
Yes.
And that first scene in the opening when he beats up those thugs and he emerges from the dark smothered in red. He's like, I am vengeance. I am this. Just everything you want from an opening Batman scene in the corniest way that delivers and executes well. Brilliant. Best use of the volume as well, which you learnt about recently.
The volume.
The volume. Oh, yes, so that, all the stuff with Catwoman and Batman on the skyscraper.
I thought you said it was called The Void.
No.
Oh, the volume. Okay.
It's a huge screen which is playing like an out of focus bit of Gotham that matches to the camera and it can do movement and it looked wicked.
Thank you very much for that email. This next email is from a fantastically named Thursday. I won't read out your last name, but your first name and last name together, Thursday. I'm just like, that's a great name.
I'd be happy to introduce myself as, hi, I'm Thursday, insert last name.
In their email, Thursday says, hi, James and George. I've just recently become obsessed with your podcast and have been going back through all the episodes and I'm enjoying them so much.
Nice.
Thank you. I do like it when they go back.
Yeah. Sorry as well.
I just recently listened to one of your episodes where you spoke about how you both love The Grinch and quote the film a lot. I was so excited that you shared a love for this film. It is one of my all-time favorite films. It is the film my mum and I watch every Christmas, and we both quote basically the entire film all the time to each other. Love your work. Looking forward to listening to you more. Thanks, Thursday in Sydney, Australia.
Thursday, thank you.
Thank you so much. Not a question in there,
We're recording. On a Thursday.
We are, actually, And you can listen to this anytime.
Yes.
But yes, not a question in there, but we do love The Grinch.
And
we talked about it at length, about why it's fantastic.
I'm due a rewatch. It's been a couple of years for me, maybe 3 years.
It's really good. Really, really good. Thank you very much for your emails this week, guys. Really appreciate that. As if you don't know, but we will say it every week, you can send your emails in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We love to have them. We love to read them out. And again, apologies if you've sent an email in and it hasn't been read out. It's not because we don't like you. It's because we're tough. We're tight on production, and we get like postman sacks full of emails now. And we love it. We do love it. And we read all of them. But to actually,
we want to get an episode out. I'm about to go away for like 10 days, and we're not stopping.
You know,
the show goes on.
The show goes on all the time, mercifully,
never ending.
Anyway, let's end the show as we always do, James,
with a game.
Yes, it was your turn.
I was ready for you to do.
James.
Yes.
Welcome to the games round of Pop Kitchen episode 118. And there's a theme to this one. So I'm going to give you two rounds of the game we've been playing recently, which is I'm going to give you three actors' names and you have to tell me what film they star in, okay? It's like a quick cast list thing.
Yes.
But there is a theme this week. That every single one of these films features a member of the cast of Dune.
Oh, okay, nice.
So I'm going to name for you...
Fun.
Lots, because it's such a stacked cast.
Yeah, part one, part two, or just...
Mainly mixed. Part two, but mixed.
Yeah.
And I'm going to choose... I've chosen a film from one of those actors' filmographies.
Great.
And you have to tell me. So part one and part two.
Okay, yes. We'll have a part one and part two of the game as well. There'll be two rounds.
Fantastic. We'll also leave 2.5 years.
And we'll do Messiah in a few years.
James.
Yes.
Name the movie from these three actors. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Robert Pattinson, mm-hmm. Joel Edgerton, Timothy Chalamet.
That. No, shush.
The King. Daniel Kaluuya, Josh Brolin, Emily Blunt.
Sicario.
Yes, well done. Michael Fassbender, Megan Fox, Josh Brolin.
The Counselor?
Jonah Hex. Oh. And double Brolin there for you, sorry. Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Hugh Jackman.
Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, and Hugh Jackman.
The Greatest Showman.
Oh,
Stellan Skarsgård, Robin Williams, and Matt Damon.
Is Good Will Hunting.
Good William Hunting, yes. It's Good Will Hunting. Yeah. And lastly, Jonathan Groff, Rupert Grint, and Dave Bautista.
Knock at the Cabin.
Correct. Yeah. The terrible Knock at the Cabin.
That was awful.
Well done. You sort of did mix there. Yeah. I didn't realise I double Brolin'd you.
That's all right.
You can double quickly, Brolin. But there you go. Like Not bad. Brolin. Next up, you ready for round two?
Yeah, let's go.
James,
mm-hmm.
Name the movie from these three actors.
Okay.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Jennifer Lawrence, and Javier Bardem.
No, I've not got it.
That is Mother. Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
God, I do know that.
Chris Pine, Olivia Wilde, and Florence Pugh.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Correct. Christopher Walken, Christina Ricci, and Johnny Depp. Sleepy Hollow. Lea Seydoux, yeah. Rami Malek, and Daniel Craig.
No Time to Die.
Correct. Charlotte Rampling, Jeremy Irons, and Michael Fassbender.
Irons and Fassbender?
Mm.
Charlotte Rampling.
Science fiction-y. Based on a very big IP.
Alien something. No.
Assassin's Creed.
Lastly,
Austin Butler, Margaret Qualley, and Brad Pitt.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Correct.
It's hard, man. It's good. Enjoy it. I like it.
Very much.
It's a good exercise.
You know, when it's all based on the Dune cast.
What was I going to say? Name the films again, just quickly.
All of them.
Yeah, just the second round.
Mother, Don't Worry Darling, Sleepy Hollow, No Time to Die, Assassin's Creed, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Like, Rami Malek could have turned up in Dune as anything.
Oh, God,
you'd just
yeah.
be like...
Because he looks like he's sort of sucked on some sand. And he's got the sort of, it's dry out there.
He'd make a great Fremen. No, sorry, not a great Fremen, a great Harkonnen.
No, he's not. No, he wouldn't.
Of course he would.
No, he's too... He's not... You know, you need to be quite like...
Sure, he could be a slippery servant.
He's quite a small man. I think he'd be good. I think he's a Fremen.
I think he's a Fremen.
Yeah, he's Fremen.
He's too immaculate. The Fremens are a bit... They got facial hair and they're sort of wild eyes.
He got a moustache for Bohemian Rhapsody. They can give him anything if you need to.
He just seems very like...
Yeah, gaunt. He's got the gaunt. If you live in the desert, drinking your own sweat.
Rami Malek looks like the kind of guy, no disrespect to him. You know, like you go into a certain type of skincare shop that looks like a lab, like an Aesop.
Right.
Or those really expensive ones where it feels like a science lab and there's pipettes of things. He looks like someone who would sell you really premium skincare.
Well, I think balance levels. You know, you've not seen it, but the original Willy Wonka has an assistant who's very threatening. Well, sorry, that's a spoiler. He's actually, you think he's working for one of the other sweet factories, and he basically bribes Charlie to basically report back on the ingredients of something. Anyway, it turns out at the end that he's actually working for Willy Wonka. But anyway, I do see Rami Malek sort of in that kind of threatening Candyman kind of way.
He could be in a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang remake. Yes. He'd make a really horrifying child catcher.
What a backhanded compliment to give an actor.
Yeah.
Guess what? Hey, Rami, great news. They're remaking Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Oh, fantastic. They want me to play the father? No. You are perfect for the child snatcher.
We just look at you and you know what I said to Julie? Rami.
I see his face. I think snatches children.
Yeah. Can you imagine like what he'd do with it? He'd get really weird.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Also like Johnny Depp could smash that.
Yes. I think early Johnny Depp. I don't know if Johnny Depp would be bothered.
Have you heard about how when he was filming the first Pirates film, the Disney executives were like, you are ruining this franchise. And he was like, no, trust me. This shit's good. But apparently all the actors were like, what the fuck is Johnny doing to this character? He's just goofing around being drunk. But
I would like to rewatch the first Pirates film.
Yeah, the first Pirates film, solid.
I remember really enjoying that when I was a kid. I saw it a good few times. That's a solid movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was good, good fun.
Yeah, I think it's cheesier than you remember.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Like, I think the scene when Orlando Bloom and Johnny Depp are fighting in The Blacksmith.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, the reason I've been training to fight pirates all my whole life is that when I see one, I can kill one.
Oh, right.
It's a bit cheesy, but fun.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow cuts through the cheese.
Wow. Okay, cool. But then after that, no. I don't do not touch the later Pirates.
I was so excited for Pirates 2. I remember I was away and me and my sister were like, oh my God, Pirates of the Caribbean is our favourite thing ever. And then Dead Man's Chest came out and I was away, so my sister saw it. And I was like, how's Dead Man's Chest? And she's like, not good.
Isn't it a weird compliment that you could hang on one great movie, solid, good, popular, successful
based
movie.
On a theme park ride.
Yeah, you can hang five terrible films.
Yeah.
It's the same with like Alien, two great movies, you can hang five other rubbish ones. Same with Terminator.
Yeah, but they've done incredibly well. Isn't there? There was talks that Margot Robbie was going to play in a reboot with a female lead.
Pirates?
Yeah.
Margot, you can do so much better than that.
Yeah.
Why do you need to? You just did Barbie. You just did the based on an inanimate IP.
Yeah. Also, like, props to Johnny Depp for getting a bit weird with the film based on a theme park ride. It's like, yeah, this is based on a ride. I'm going to get a bit weird with it and make it interesting.
Anyway, that was episode 118 of Pop Kitchen. Thank you for listening. If you've seen Wicked Little Letters or Dune Part 2, continue to send them in to hellopopkitchenpodcast.com. Apologies if the old episode here and there is uploaded a little bit late. We're very busy. Just the two of us here, guys.
I'm morning, day and night in my free time getting this out.
It's like, you know, when you go to like the front of the train and you just, in the old fashioned days, there's just two guys covered in soot being like...
You guys are sitting with a lovely tea that's just lightly rumbling, whereas me and George are like, what do you mean we're out of court? The break.
They haven't brought the scones out yet. What are they doing up there?
We're also the chefs.
We're also doing cold. The tea.
Yeah. Oh. We're about to hit 50,000 followers on Instagram. If you listen to this show and enjoy it and you for some reason don't follow us on Instagram, please go and give us a follow. Get us to that lovely 50K so we can keep paying our wages and making ourselves happy. That would be lovely.
And if you are a new listener, thank you for listening.
Yeah,
welcome to the club. We'll have you anytime. No bonus this week. But we will just say,
continue to please.
We love you. And please continue to like and follow and subscribe to us on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. Share it. We put out content on there.
Go listen to the Underrated Actors episode from whenever that came out.
I want to say it was in the 20s.
Is it really that
episode
long ago?
20s. Yeah, it was 2022 we did that.
Damn, yeah. Go listen to that.
Until next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.